Hello, how the tech are you? This is our weekly tech show on Echoplex Media. I'm historian Matt. I'm a co-producer and a co-host on this show. And I'm going to jump right into my first story. And this one's a little bit scary, but basically we could lose science if publishers go bankrupt. Basically, it used to be that libraries would keep paper copies of journals everywhere, and you know, multiple libraries would, you know, each have their own copy and distribute it all over the place. So you'd have a lot of redundancy, things would be fine. But now most of these, you know, science publishers are moving everything online. And since, you know, these, you know, online websites aren't really archived or mirrored anywhere, they're basically behind paywalls. If a publisher goes bankrupt, these journals could become inaccessible or even lost completely. The article that I linked to goes into a lot more detail, but that's basically it. We could lose a lot of science or lose access to a lot of science if these publishers go bankrupt. What do you guys think?
Not great.
No.
Yeah, very not great. I'm really surprised that they're not backed up. I would think that there would be some organization whose sole purpose would be to like archive all these scientific papers. Does that not exist?
So from what I can tell, there are methods that they can use to archive, but of course these scientific journals are, you know, worried about making money. So everything's behind a paywall and they don't want to give it out to somewhere that people can get around their paywall, basically. And from what I can tell, the bigger companies, the bigger publishers, do have a method of archiving and can, you know, if they go out of business or go bankrupt, it's not as big a deal. There's redundancy there. The big publishers, the issue is like these smaller publishers that if they go bankrupt, a lot of them are not taking the necessary steps to archive their stuff or, you know, make backups of their stuff anywhere. So all of their journals could be lost.
So I would think if they're about to go under, that most of these smaller publishers would just dump the data somewhere.
Maybe. I mean, sometimes that happens. Sometimes that doesn't, though.
Because if they're about to go bankrupt, it's not like they can monetize it anymore. So I can't imagine them not just putting it somewhere, like on archive.org or something.
Yeah.
Well, that would be if the people in charge of these journals were actually, or these publishers were actually, like interested in science as the pursuit of human knowledge. I feel like, you know, this kind of shows that a lot of them are more interested in profit than they are in like science. You know, if they're worried about like another place backing up their stuff, which might allow someone to bypass their paywall.
Maybe. I mean, somebody, you know, somebody within the organization, even like going rogue or whatever, dumping all the data, or I mean, somebody's going to have access to it. Like whoever their web host is, the data is not just, it doesn't just disappear immediately after the journal goes out of business. There's gotta be some way to get around this. And I'm not concerned necessarily that all the data will be gone. The bigger concern is that, you know, if it gets dumped somewhere, it's going to be hard to find. Maybe, yeah. Like, I don't know if it all gets dumped in a zip file onto archive.org. Well, but now you're looking for something specific. Well, you have no idea what's in the zip file that got dumped onto archive.org, or, you know, maybe HK backs it up on his server array, or, you know, whatever it is. Like you may not be able to search it as easily or find it as easily in whatever archived format might come, because it's, you know, especially if somebody's like in a hurry, they're maybe not supposed to be doing it. They might just take the entire content of the web server, you know, put it in a tarball or something and stick it somewhere. And then like, how the hell is anybody going to find any of the information in it without extracting it and then searching it? So, yeah. Have any journals, Matt, do you know, have any journals, gone under, and have we lost the information from them?
Not that I'm aware of, and it didn't seem to be in the article itself. This is more of a warning, and there was some study on these journals that this article is basically reporting on that it could happen, and it's, you know, a problem, but it seems to be limited to the smaller publishers. But I mean, yeah, you could think of like a little mini dark ages if we lose a bunch of science.
Yeah, like I said, I can't imagine, maybe not the people that run the organization, but even just the webmaster going, uh-oh, this website's going to go down. I should download all this stuff, right? Like,
yeah,
somebody inside of that organization with access is going to care enough, I think, in almost all these cases to want to get the information. But then are they technically stealing it? Are they criminally liable, civilly liable? Like, are they taking risks that they shouldn't be taking? Are they going to end up getting Aaron Swartz'd? You know, like who knows what could happen here?
Yeah. You know,
that's wild. What do you got next, Matt?
Okay. So my next one's a little more fun. And that is basically, Google creates the Bermuda Triangle of Wi-Fi. And what am I talking about? So basically Google has the Google Domes, which are, these new buildings that Google has built. They call them the Bayview campus for Google, and the shape of these domes are causing problems for the Wi-Fi. So the domes are shaped well, like domes kind of, that's what we called them when I was actually working at Google. I think they finished one while I was there, but the domes themselves, like, they're not just like a regular dome, but they have like these swooping sheets of metal, as they call it, that look kind of tent-like. It'll make sense if you see them. So it's big sheets of metal for the roof and then some glass in between. But the shape of these big metal sheets seem to be redirecting the Wi-Fi signals in such a way as to basically dampen their range. And, you know, that's kind of a problem for a tech company who is trying to get their employees back to the office. Going back to the office with bad Wi-Fi, what do you guys think?
Run Ethernet.
Yeah.
Yep, that would be an issue.
That's what they said is happening. Everybody's kind of, you know, trying to find Ethernet ports to connect directly to, so because the Wi-Fi signal's so bad.
When I was there, the laptop they gave me did not have an Ethernet port.
No, I mean, I could do it on my the desktop, right? It had an Ethernet port. I think the laptop I had didn't have an Ethernet port, but I may have had a dongle or could have gotten one that would allow me to plug in.
Yeah, you can live that dongle life.
Yeah.
this is because that's convenient. These are so convenient. They're so slim.
Yeah.
What if we shared a dongle under the dome?
This is really funny because it's like, this is supposed to be like one of the genius factories of our world. And nobody was like, hey, do you think all these big sheets of metal might impact the Wi-Fi or other like radio signals here? I would think that when you design an office park or whatever, that most people that do that would consider things like, is all of our equipment going to work in this building?
Right. Yeah. You'd think like, I guess they just, you know, paid some architect to make a strange looking building, right? Supposed to be a good looking building. I don't know about that, but didn't really take into consideration its effects.
Are there like mitigations? There's got to be like easy, like fairly easy mitigations to this. This is not like,
I don't know. Apparently they've done some work to make it better, but it doesn't seem to be completely fixed.
Probably just more access points.
And maybe just adding more access points.
Fun stuff. I love that the world's smartest people can't get their Wi-Fi to work in their new building. This is amazing. This is fantastic. Good stuff, Google. Fantastic.
That's all I got.
That would be like really frustrating, right? Like it's like your first day and you're like, oh, you're like, I'm, you know, you just got hired. You're like, I am a senior software engineer. Why do I have to call the help desk because I can't get a Wi-Fi signal?
Yeah.
You're like, this seems embarrassing. You would think that it might be, the person might be like, this is embarrassing. I can't believe I'm calling you, but my Wi-Fi keeps dropping on the machine they gave me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. When I wasn't just at Google, but other places that I worked, other tech companies, like, you have a laptop and you go around all over the place using it. Like, it's not just like you're sitting at your desk all the time and can plug in. You're going to be in places and, you know, conference rooms that probably aren't going to have places to plug in, either, even at port or something, or, you know, somebody's random desk because you want to show them what's something on your computer or something like that. It's really useful to have Wi-Fi.
Yep. When I was working at Google, LinkedIn, and Facebook, I never used my desktop. At Facebook, I didn't even have a desktop, but at Google and LinkedIn, they gave me a desktop, and I just never used it.
Really?
I was like, I don't want to take my laptop and then like have to switch context if I was working on my desktop when I like go to a meeting. I want to just have like the continuation of what I was doing. So like, of course I'm going to work on my laptop at my desk.
Okay.
Not if it doesn't have an Ethernet port and there's no Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Maybe they're trying to force people to use their desktops.
Laptops are pretty, Wi-Fi is pretty important in an office like Google.
Yeah, this is amazing. This is pretty funny. I think they'll be able to mitigate this pretty quickly. I don't think it'll be a problem. I think they'll find the dead spots and just be able to add access points. Repeaters.
Add some more access points, but it's just funny that Google, of all places, this would happen.
They could give everybody these ridiculous USB wireless things that have like 6-inch antennas on them. That would fix it all. You just walk around with your laptop with this, in your other hand, you have this Wi-Fi, this USB Wi-Fi thing that looks like a...
You're like trying to get a good signal.
you got a radio transmitter in one hand and the laptop in the other.
they issue everybody a Pringles can to attach to their Wi-Fi.
just point this at the nearest access point. It should be fine.
Just point at the nearest point. Yeah.
All right, what do you got, HK? All right.
Hello, how the tech are you? My name is HK Perrin, and this week I've got a continuation of a story we covered recently. Apple had decided to remove PWAs in Europe, I assume as a punishment for Europe's Digital Markets Act. Well, they have gone back on that. It was only February that they announced that iOS 17.4 would remove support for progressive web apps. Progressive web apps are basically websites that look and act like a native app. But Apple doesn't have control over whether you can install them. The EU's Digital Markets Act forces Apple to allow alternative app stores on iOS. So... it's my opinion, I don't know that this is the case, that Apple was going to fight back against this law by removing support for PWAs. They did announce that PWAs weren't going to be supported anymore, so that's why I think they did it. One note is that Apple will only allow Safari to install PWAs, so no Gecko or Blink-powered PWAs on iOS, only WebKit. Gecko is Firefox's rendering engine and Blink is Chrome's rendering engine. So now Apple is going to allow PWAs going forward, but solely in that Safari WebKit rendering engine. Another note is that 9to5 Mac, their take on this reversal is that Apple seems to have misinterpreted the law, assuming that it couldn't support PWAs without allowing all browsers to install them. Wouldn't that be nice? What do you guys think?
So they were going to do malicious compliance and then decided not to.
Yep.
Yeah, I think they just got a lot of heat from the online community and so much pushback. Like, this is a stupid idea. This is screwing everybody up. So they found they rolled back what they were doing.
Yeah, they got a lot of pushback against this. Like, basically everyone was like, this is a garbage decision that makes your platform so much worse.
Yeah.
It's true. I think people in Europe would have probably moved to Android if they relied on progressive web apps, or some people might have just done it on principle.
Yeah. You mentioned in the last episode, my app is a progressive web app, so... you know, I would have been personally affected by this.
That's a crazy town. Apple Apple's lock-in stuff, some of it benefits the users, but some of it is just dumb. And this one's just dumb.
Yep. Yeah, I don't even know why they're so against this. Like, I understand the concept of, like, they don't have control because it's installed through a website instead. But most people don't know how to do that. Like, you have to specifically go out of your way to, like, learn how to do that. So really, like, it's only going to affect a very small percentage of their users who probably wouldn't be paying, you know, $15 a month for some thing on their store anyway.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it was about the money. I think they just didn't like the law, and they were like, well, here's something we can do. And then they thought people were going to blame them. I think they miscalculated. I think people at Apple may have thought that they were going to blame the European regulators for it. Nope, people blamed Apple because that's who was at fault, actually, because people are not stupid. Yeah. Or not that stupid.
Yeah.
Some of the time.
Has the EU, made any comment or anything on this, or
the
reversal?
I don't know. I don't know if it's related to this, but I know that the EU has started an investigation into Apple's practices based on their, like, reaction to this law. So I don't know if this was part of it, like, specifically the PWA part, but it definitely could have been. It's very anti-competitive.
Yes.
Everything Apple does is very anti-competitive, which is actually, funny enough, it causes people to flee for the competition, which is funny.
Yep.
Well,
not enough, unfortunately.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that, or maybe nothing. Maybe we won't. Who knows? Maybe we'll keep an eye on it. Maybe we won't. This week I have two stories. I am Dave. I'm producer Dave. I'm the producer, a co-producer, I suppose, of the show, and the producer of all the stuff at Echoplex Media. Hit up our website, echoplexmedia.com. Read my recent blog post. It has nothing to do with anything we're talking about today, but you should read it. Anyway, my first story is about movies, which is weird because I don't talk about movies. But there's an app. It's called Run Pee, and it's exactly what you might think it is. It tells you when you should run and pee during the movie. So what it does is they've figured out the points during the movie when there are things that aren't so important to the plot, and then if it has access to the exact movie start time and whatnot, as you can see here on the overlay, it tells you when you can pee next and then when you can pee after that. And I think this is especially important or interesting as more and more movie theaters are serving beer. Would you guys use Run Pee?
Absolutely. Like, movies have gotten so long recently. It used to be like a movie was an hour and a half, and now there are so many movies that are like almost or even cross the border of 3 hours.
Yeah. And I feel like, based on your description, the gaps that they're showing are, you know, the annoying things like character development sections of the movie. Stuff like that, you know.
It could be that, or like a dance montage or something, depending on what kind of movie it is. Like,
yeah, but I suspect they're gonna be like, they're gonna have you stay for that because it's an action sequence or something, you know. Huh. I don't know. I haven't looked at this the app directly, so I don't know exactly what they're saying, what sections they can say you can go pee at or whatever. I just don't get a drink when I'm at the movie theater or anything, and dehydrate myself a little bit so I don't have to, so I can last the whole movie.
This could be self-defeating if everybody starts using it, right? Because then, like, right when the whole theater gets up and tries to use the bathroom at the same time.
Yeah.
And so now you're waiting. So now your pee window, you're well beyond your pee window. Yeah.
I'm wondering, do they just do it strictly time-based, or do they say, okay, when this character says this, you can now go pee or something like that? So you can actually, like, watch the movie and, like, look for these, like, moments.
So that what we saw on the screen, it looked like they have a time thing, but I'm assuming you can click in it, like, because it's not going to always be 100% accurate, right? Sometimes the previews run longer or whatever, so it may tell you what happens prior or whatever. It's a funny idea. I think it's gimmicky. I don't think anybody's really going to use it. I bet it just asks you for just the most permissions. It probably wants you to take a picture of yourself peeing too. It's probably very very intrusive.
Yeah.
I think we should just bring back the concept of intermissions, please. Can we do that?
Some of these longer movies definitely should.
Like, if a movie's over 2 hours, why not just have an intermission?
Yeah. Right, right. Plus, you get to mingle. It makes the intermission makes the movie like a social experience where you can hang out for 15 minutes and maybe meet other moviegoers in the lobby.
Yeah. And they'd sell more concessions.
Yeah. So you'd have to pee again.
Yeah.
All right. I got one more story this week. Former Twitter head of trust and safety, Yoel Roth, is now the head of trust for the Match Group. I mean, I think everybody knows what the Match Group is, right? It's a conglomerate that runs all your dating apps. Most popular, of course, being Tinder. And Yoel Roth left Twitter rather famously after Elon Musk took over. And shortly after leaving Twitter, Elon Musk was boosting posts that suggest that Yoel Roth was a groomer, as they would say, because he's some of his work in academia was talking about essentially that we all know that people underage are going to use apps like Grindr, and that the companies that run apps like Grindr need to do things to either mitigate that or keep those people safe on the app. Do any of you, I doubt either of you are using any of the Match Group stuff.
I'm not, but it sounds to me like he's the opposite of a groomer.
Yes. That's
yeah. I don't, how does that follow that he was complaining that the underage people were using these apps, and so those apps should do more to you know, keep them out. How does that make somebody a groomer? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, in an academic paper, you could just take a few sentences out of context, right? And make it.
I guess so.
I feel like Elon Musk just assumes that everyone he doesn't like is an evil person.
That could be true. That could be true. But I'm glad this guy landed, actually, because his work in academia was about dating apps. And so it seems like he landed after, you know, I don't know what he was doing. I think he was working in academia again, but he landed in the right place, because that's where his other work was. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. I don't use the Match Group stuff because they don't own Grindr. And Grindr is the superior technology.
Yeah, I think Match owns a lot of different dating type apps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they own the big one is Tinder, but they also obviously Match.com. And I think they do plenty of Fish and I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I looked it up before this and I was like, this list is too long. I'm not going to try to read any portion of this gigantic list yet, but they scooped up like OkCupid and all this other stuff. So, you know, they're the big one. I guess
sounds to me like they need to be broken up.
Sure. Well, I wonder how many people have broken up with somebody over one of these services. Like if you go on to Tinder to break up with, I don't even know how that would work. I guess you could break up with somebody on Grindr because there's robust messaging in there. I just have no idea how Tinder works. I figure Tinder is just full of the thirsty gays that aren't on Grindr anymore. Anyway, I guess that's the show. HK, do you want to read the show out so that we have something for the podcast listeners?
Absolutely. That has been How the Tech Are You? This is our weekly show. We put out in segments on YouTube, and we also put it out as a podcast, which you can find at echoplexmedia.com, along with all our other podcasts. You can also support us at patreon.com/echoplex and eplex.store. Remember to like and subscribe, and another video for you will be right up on the screen right here. Have a great tech and week.